Welcome to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. The only NFL podcast where one of the hosts thinks the Patriots should get a puppy cam. Dominique, do you know what a puppy cam is?
Yeah, so you can like watch your dog when you're not home, right? Or like say hi.
Or like a nanny cam, yeah, yeah. For dogs, yeah. But you have one, I have one called a Furbo. Get at me, Furbo, if you want to sponsor the Mina Kimes Show feature. I actually have two. One was given to me as a gift from my parents. The other was a gift from Dan Le Batard. So I have one on each floor of my house. And when you're not at home, you can use it to shoot treats at your dog.
Oh, that's nice. I've actually seen videos of that on like, Twitter and stuff. And the dogs, all of them don't seem like they like it.
Really?
Yeah, I think they like treats, but obviously it's just shooting them at you. It's not like they lay them gently. It's just...
Oh, see, Lenny likes to chase.
Okay.
It's a little dystopian. Like,
you can like talk to him through it also, right? You can like press a button on your phone. And,
yes,
like,
but yeah. I don't do that because I don't want to confuse him, right? I don't want to create like a her. Have you seen her?
I have seen her.
Joaquin Phoenix, yeah. Anyways, speaking of dystopian, I realize this is a tangent. I promise we're going to talk about the NFL soon. You know the Dr. Pepper challenge? Does it strike you as like exceedingly dystopian now that they have the kids come out and like say what they would do with the money?
Right.
It's so Hunger Games feeling. I can no longer enjoy it the way I used to.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is. But I mean, isn't that what it all is all the time? Sorry, I don't.
Yeah,
know.
But I mean, I didn't think about it before.
But now
they're like, I want to pay like you know my mom's loans, and then you're like, wait, I just want to make fun of you trespassing. Now I feel terrible.
That is pretty bad, but I thought it used to be just for like tuition, right?
Yeah.
Now they let you spend it on whatever.
Well, they let you explain why you need the tuition. I think. Which is great. I don't know. I sound terrible.
No, it's fine. I understand. It just makes you it makes you realize that they actually need it, and you shouldn't make people compete for something that they need.
Yeah,
like,
right.
I would rather somebody come up there and say, "Yeah, I want to blow it on drugs and strippers."
Right.
Then you're like, "Hey, whatever, just have fun."
College should be free. Speaking of dystopian surveillance states and such, I want to talk about a couple.
If you're
big,
really good at football,
I want to talk about a couple big games this week, and I do actually want to talk about the actual football that's going to be played. Before we get into that, I really want to talk to you about a story that can only be described as an early Christmas gift for NFL fans. First, Dominique. First, there was Spygate. Then there was Deflategate. Now there's Benghazi.
Oh, that's what you want.
Is that getting cut out? Okay, wait, let me try. Yeah.
You can't say Benghazi? Oh.
Now there's Spygate 2, the Island of Lost Dreams. That's a Spygate 2, Kids 2 joke.
I've seen Spy Kids.
Right, you have kids, yeah. Is Spy Kids good? Should I watch it? First look up if it's a Disney movie.
So there's some movies.
Before you weigh in.
When you're a parent of three small kids, you see a lot of kids' movies and some of them keep your attention and some of them you just like zone out. And I have to be honest, Spy Kids is a zone out for me.
Didn't do it for you. It's not Frozen 2. Frozen 2 in theaters now.
It's not a Disney property. Disney properties, they reel you in, baby.
So what I want to talk to you about with regards to this latest scandal, which I'm sure anyone who's listening to this show already knows the details. Patriots film crew, apparently contractors, that part's still unclear to me, went to a Browns game. They're filming the Bengals sideline. They're saying they're getting B-roll for a docuseries called Do Your Job about advanced scouts, but, you know, raises the questions, well, why are you gathering B-roll of a sideline that the scout's not in? Setting aside that, this is hilarious for 3,000 reasons. What is the utility of watching a sideline? I think that's kind of what I want to talk about first.
For both
offense and defense, because I think that it's different.
I've thought about this, and that is the main, like, defense of the Patriots is, like, at this point, you get nothing out of it because the other Spygate was watching signals, which that matters. And then they went to the headsets where your linebacker or somebody on your defense, a linebacker or a safety or somebody, has a speaker in their ear, so you get the plays that way. But the Patriots are known for, like, when they're in trouble, going to no huddle. When you're in no huddle, you don't have the ability to communicate. So there is a lot of hand signals in that situation. So there'll be signals from the sideline. There'll be signals on the field. There is some potential utility in understanding like the emergency signals because you don't huddle in that situation.
Yeah, that's my understanding on both sides of the ball. It's sometimes to communicate, personnel, just like quick.
Right.
personnel decisions, tempo, but yeah, right, in response to offenses doing like shifts, motion, that kind of thing, or moving quickly, sometimes you just have to, especially for the defensive coach, communicate what's happening really quickly. Earlier this year, Dominique, Kellen Moore, who we will talk about, we're going to, spoiler alert, talk about the Cowboys in that game. The Saints defense said they stole hand signals from him that they had picked up from his days as a quarterback in college, which he said was at Boise State, which was he said was ridiculous. Which, you know, obviously you're not going to be like, yeah, they got me. But I thought, I remember thinking that was interesting because I was like, hand signals? Like, right. Can an offensive coordinator just radio it in?
Right.
But, you know, maybe some guys do use them occasionally.
Well, yeah, those, I mean, it could be more efficient to just have like a hand up with like some numbers or something or a quick motion when you see something. But you know, the radios go off, what is it? 15 seconds or something like that. The radios go off at some point, so you might need hand signals at that point. But normally when you're on the field, you already know what you need to know. It has to be like between plays. There's not like going to be a motion and then everyone looks to the sideline on defense at least and finds out how we're going to play it. We already know how we're going to play bunch. We already know how we're going to play shifts. But there potentially on the offensive side of the ball, there could be some help. Like I mentioned, in no huddle when there's no time to discuss and they might signal in cover two or signal in that a blitz is coming.
Interesting. Or maybe like if a wide receiver is confused, he would look at it. But again, like that's not something that you would have much utility from stealing.
I feel like college teams should be doing this because
College team. Yeah, they do it. No, this is a thing in college. Absolutely. 100%.
Good. Congratulations. They cheat. I like that. Proud of them.
If I was a coordinator, I'd be using hand signals all the time.
But I just mean not use the signals. I'm not saying I feel like they should use signals. Yeah, I mean, they should be stealing.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure there's been a few small.
We stole signals when I was at Maryland because we got a transfer from another school, a quarterback transfer, and we knew a lot of their signals. We blew the team out, and our coach was first to the press conference. So he decided that his move was going to be to accuse them of stealing signals before they even got to the press conference. Ingenious. So he went up and was like, they were stealing our signals, but we blew them out anyway. And then their coach came up afterwards and said, he was stealing our signals. Too late. We already took that corner.
If I was a college coach, I would just do weird stuff with my hands to confuse. Like I would just dab, multiple dabs back and forth. And then they'd be like, what is going on? She's dabbing. She just dabbed three times. And then she winked at us.
Oh, that's a deep ball. That's obviously a triple dab deep ball. Yeah, obviously. With a wink? Oh, yeah.
Well, just to kind of wrap it up, like, I obviously this is more of a joke than anything. Although, you know, like, they admitted they did something wrong, right? They broke the rules. The Patriots came out and said so. Do you think anything will happen?
No, it doesn't seem like it. I mean, while I find it hard to believe that they could gain a ton from filming the sidelines, I don't understand why they were filming an opposing team's sideline. It just so happened to be the team that they're playing next week for something that they're recording for their, like, digital media stuff. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me. Why are you there? Why are you recording that? If you're doing a show on Do Your Job, which what I read meant that they kind of explain people in the organization their job, who from your organization is already there and why are they on the Bengals sideline and why are you filming them? Like, none of that makes sense
to me. You'd think also, given their history and the fact that, like, most people believe they don't deserve the benefit of the doubt because of that history, there would be a sensitivity to the idea of, like, okay, if we're, let's say we're doing this series and it's not a long con and it's not an elaborate ruse that we set up. Like, what if the phrase do your job was all part of an elaborate ruse just to set up a video series, just to get these signals? Okay. But let's say it's not. Why not just do a different team you're not playing? Like, you know what I mean? Like, if you'd think they would be more, as an organization, like, sensitive to the optics of
I guess somebody was probably doing some advanced scouting. But again, that advanced scout was probably not on that sideline. Like, you can film the person doing some advanced scouting.
Oh, right.
Advanced
the job
scouting.
Was an advanced scout. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But
so I guess.
It does. None of that to me makes any sense. But again, it said that they had on Patriots gear, which again is just like so stupid. Like, if you're going to steal, then don't wear a logo that says, hey, I'm from here. I don't know.
That's one of those things where it's like so dumb. It makes you think they're innocent. I don't know. It's like Bill Belichick getting in my head. So it always happens with coaches.
Make me all waste the time out, Bill.
Well, that's all our Pats talk. So listen, we talked about Tom Brady, the Patriots, but really we got to talk about the actual greatest quarterback in NFL history, the greatest quarterback in the NFL right now, the one true GOAT. I can't decide if I want to call him Ryan Stanahill, like I'm a Stan, or Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah.
Should I Ryan Tannehill? I mean, how are you feeling about the GOAT?
It has to be Tannehill because Stanahill suggests that he's the Stan. I feel
right.
like you are
I'm
the
a Stanahill.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you are a Stanahill.
Like
in
I'm
all
a Shanistan.
Yeah. You're a Stanahill and he is Tannehill.
Well, he's the Manahill. And he's playing in this is actually a really good game. Yeah. And, which is Texans Titans, the 2-8-5 teams tied atop the AFC South right now. And Dominic, I want to start here because I think the Texans kind of are what we thought the Titans were in some ways, which is the inscrutable team. Like the Titans in some ways, I think in a lot of ways, have become very consistent. And I think I have a good grasp on who they are as a team. Now, I don't think Ryan Tannehill is likely to continue playing at the level he has because it is frankly unsustainable. That doesn't mean he's going to be bad. It's just he's been so good and it's so unrepresentative of his career thus far. It does seem likely to regress. But the Texans, like, what are the Houston Texans, right? They just are completely unknowable as an organization. They, week to week, they seem to oscillate. You know, one week they're dominating the Patriots. The next week they're getting destroyed by the Drew Locke-led Denver Broncos. I mean, do you feel like you have any grasp on this team?
They're bad. I mean, they're not good. Yeah.
But they have high highs. Yeah, they're bad with high highs.
These past 2 weeks have been like, the Texans on steroids, but all season they've kind of been up and down and unpredictable. And that to me equates to a football team that is not very good, but has some good players. And when they lost JJ Watt, who was having a great season, I thought their defense was going to completely fall off. But again, their defense has just been up and down since that happened. So, I don't trust a team like that. I don't believe in a team like that that's inconsistent. And also when they have someone who's as talented as Deshaun Watson, I think that's that's partially responsible because he can reach such high highs that he can put the team on his back. And if you play well early on offense, that makes everything easier on defense. And I think that that's what we see sometimes from this team, but I don't have any faith in them. And it's just hard this whole season. There's so many bad teams in the NFL. That is hard to, cause I look back at the Texans or the Titans' recent wins.
Yeah.
And this streak that they've been on, there's not a lot of playoff teams in that run.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of teams that I'm like, hey, watch out. That was really impressive. So they've been good. So it's hard for me to get excited about anyone because it's impossible to have a good run without it being chock full of like mediocre to below average teams.
Right. It does feel like there's so many really bad teams that it's kind of hard to evaluate some organizations. It's funny. They asked us to do, I don't know if they asked you, so no offense if you weren't asked, but they asked some of us to pick the 10 top candidates for MVP yesterday. I don't know. Were you on that email?
I mean, maybe I was.
Okay. Well,
I just sent an email that said Lamar.
All right.
Was that 10?
In actuality, it's really freaking hard to pick 10 players.
Yeah.
Like, I struggled, Dominique, to get to 5 because there really aren't more than 5 dominant quarterbacks. And I would have had Deshaun Watson, but I think I moved. I don't know where I moved into. Either it was like maybe 6 or something. But, like, he's had some really bad games. I mean, this. When I went back to watch this Broncos game, I really expected it to just be the Houston defense, which I don't think is very good, laying an egg. And we'll get to that in a second. And I think they're also very vulnerable in this game. But Watson didn't play well, right? And it's not just, and look, it's not just the offensive line. Like, and we've said this before, he holds onto the ball, and, you know, a lot of his sacks are his fault. He had 3 sacks in this game. And they took an average of 5.5 seconds, which usually you're talking about the quarterback there. Yeah. But, you know, every now and then he'll just kind of have a game where he's just really off. Like it kind of reminded me of the playoff game last year. Like, well, he'll just sort of sail throws or throw them low. I mean, there was one throw in this game where DeAndre Hopkins should have sued him afterwards.
Like, yeah, I saw that one. Yeah.
You see that hospital
Jackson,
ball?
Jackson came and
Kareem Jackson, who balled out in this game. But And I say this as someone who, like, absolutely adores, when Deshaun Watson's hot, I think he's honestly top three, no question. But, he has ups and downs. And the other thing I think that caught my eye is, Will Fuller wasn't in this game. Kiki Cutie had the big fumble early on, but I think, like, Fuller might be the Jenga piece where if you pull it out, the offense kind of comes crumbling down, which I'm not sure I would have guessed before. Yeah. And it's not to say that DeAndre Hopkins isn't still the number one receiver, but I think because this team is so stars and scrubs and so unbalanced, they need Watson, Fuller, and Hopkins, and I think a run game that's working, all have to happen for them to put together one of those good games.
Well, Fuller's the deep ball guy. He's a big play guy. And that is what scares defenses more than anything. That, no matter how good DeAndre Hopkins is, and he's capable of making big plays, but he's not a speed burner necessarily. And the defenses that you would have to play to contain a guy like that, I don't think that it would compromise you in the same way that you would have to play a defense if you are afraid that someone's going to beat you over the top. So that's the best argument I could make for that. But I also think that Deshaun Watson is just, he's not turnover prone necessarily, but he's never been one that just was ultra conservative with his behavior in the pocket or how he throws the ball. Like he can turn the ball over and he can make some big plays. So he hasn't mastered that ability in the same way that Russell Wilson has, where it's kind of consistent. It's consistent, and then they're high highs. He's pretty consistent. Most of the time, he has high highs, and he has low lows, which he hasn't been able to, like, moderate that out of his game the same way Russell has.
The Texans' point differential is plus +8.
Ugh.
That's crazy. They're 8-5. Because of the, I guess, high highs that we spoke of with this offense, I kind of feel like they've got a shot in any one-off game, really. Right. You know what I mean? If especially if Fuller's in there. But, you know, as we discussed, this defense is not good. I mean, their number one pass rusher, you know, after Watt went out, is Whitney Merciless. Drew Lock had pretty much all day. And I was, Aaron Rice at The Athletic, who covers the Texans, had a great piece on sort of this matchup and how bad they were against play action in particular. Yeah, it's not great. And, okay, here it is. Here are the numbers, right? So Locke was 7 for 8. This is according to Aaron, for 130 yards off of play action, averaging 16.3 yards per attempt. On the season, they're ranked 25th versus play action in completion percentage, 27th in pressure rate. And oh, they happen to be playing the Tennessee Titans, who are now using play action more than any team in the NFL.
Yep, that could be ugly. So Henry's running the ball well. The offensive line is run blocking quite well. A couple of those big plays he had last week, just enormous holes, and you let that giant human being get ahead of steam, it's going to be hard to bring him down. And yeah, I think that's the argument, I guess, against Ryan Tannehill. You said it's hard to find MVP candidates. Like, maybe Ryan Tannehill is one of them.
Dude, I considered it. I mean, I was just, you know, he hasn't played enough games probably, but good Lord. I mean, since he took over, they're second in points per game, first in net yards per play. He's averaging 9.8 yards per attempt, 10.2 adjusted yards per attempt. He leads the league in all the advanced stats as well. The completion percentage above expected, like, it's unbelievable.
And the only thing that was changed was him. So he seems like he is pretty valuable to this team. So I don't think it's a crazy argument, but I also think that he was never really bad in Miami.
Yeah, let's do this.
he's not great now, but it's not like he is doing, when you watch his plays, it's not like he's doing incredible things. There are people pretty wide open. He made some good passes. He threw a lot of short passes to AJ Brown, who just turned them into bigger plays than they should have been. So I think this, more than me learning that Ryan Tannehill is a god, is me learning that Marcus Mariota is even worse than we thought.
Yeah, this doesn't. Well, I was going to say, yes, I think this, it all reflects poorly on Mariota. We also might be witnessing the Jeff Fisherization of Adam Gase.
Uh-oh.
Because good Lord.
Uh-oh.
I mean, Tannehill, he had him playing well at first, but this reflects pretty poorly on him too, I think. Do you know the name of the Titans offensive coordinator?
Nope.
Okay, so you're not alone. I'd say most of America doesn't. In fact, at the beginning of the season, I feel like I may have said the words, who the heck is Arthur Smith? Because it sounds like a fake name. And he was an internal hire, right? I think he was like the tight ends coach. And we talked about it in the contact, not you and I can't remember who I talked about.
No, it was with me. I remember it. Okay. I remember having this conversation.
Yeah, well, I was like, oh, another offensive coordinator. Poor Mariota. But he's done a great job, honestly. You know, I mentioned how much they've been using play action with Tannehill, and his passer rating off of play action this season, 138.9, Dominique.
Wow.
It's ridiculous. And it kind of feels like with him, Henry, and A.J. Brown, who is just phenomenal in space, I mean, his ability to break tackles is... I really liked him out of college, too. I think he was my number one or two receiver off the board, but he looks like a steal for them. And it kind of feels like that's like a triplet with an identity, right? Like aggressive, physical, breaks tackles, makes tackles in the case of Ryan Tannehill. I don't know if you saw that baller tackle he made. I don't know. It like feels like, oh yeah, like the Titans, like they're this kind of like gritty, athletic. I mean, say that because he's a white quarterback.
Yeah, he is athletic though. I mean, they did a lot of boot. They got him out of the pocket. And I think it's consistent with the identity of Mike Vrabel, the coach. Like, it's a similar thing. It's weird when the owners and dogs start looking the same. It's the same thing happens with coaches and teams, because this is exactly what I would envision a Mike Vrabel led team to look like. It's like, we're going to run the ball first and foremost, and our receivers are going to block and break tackles, and quarterback, if you get an interception or fumble recovery, he's going to stick his nose in there too.
Who doesn't Mike Vrabel make sense with? Like, who's like a delicate, like, you know, like a West Coast maybe type scheme? I'm trying to think of I can't see Vrabel and Kirk Cousins together.
Oh, no, that wouldn't work.
It doesn't work. Yeah. Mm-mm. It doesn't make, although he's also, by the way, playing very well. But, putting a pit in the offense, which has been very good, do you feel like this Titans defense is good? Like, because right now, both of these teams have a shot at this. I think the Titans maybe have to win both. If they split and then they both win their other game, the Texans take it. But the Titans are very much in control. These teams are playing twice.
Right.
They're in control of their destiny. Do you think this defense is good enough, assuming Will Fuller plays?
No, if the best version of the Texans show up. So that's the thing. It's like,
we saw them shred the Pats.
Yeah, I don't think they are good enough to stop the best version of the Texans, but we're not sure what Texans we're going to get. Like, I guess this would be an on week since they took a week off last week. But I don't know. I think about it from a playoff perspective. If I am waiting to play one of those teams, what team would I want to play more? And who would you choose if you were the opponent? If you were a fan of AFC team?
It depends on my team.
Oh, man.
I know, it's a cop-out answer.
That
okay,
is a
let's
cop-out
say it's
answer.
Seattle. Okay, let's say Seattle.
Let's say Seattle's in the AFC, and they're waiting to see who they're going to play. You're at home rooting for who to win the game.
I'd rather play the Texans.
Yeah. That sounds crazy, though, but I think you're right. I feel the same way. I don't know why, though, because I'm not afraid of Tannehill.
No, I know, and I really do think he's going to regress. I don't think, actually, on that note, by the way, so there were reports this week that they're starting to talk extension.
Yep.
What do you think about that? I mean, it's certainly a buy-high situation.
Yeah,
for Ryan
Tannehill. I guess the other option is, what, franchise him?
Yeah, you could franchise him.
Because you can't let him
like
leave.
27 or something. Yeah.
It's hard to find quarterbacks. I think you can sign Tannehill if you believe in him, if you like what you've seen, and they trust him. Like, it was 20-something seconds left before half, and they had him throwing the ball when they were backed up, and he threw like a beautiful seam pass to get
to
them,
AJ. Yeah,
to get them into
like
in the field
yards.
Goal range.
Yeah,
that like just making that decision tells me a lot more what they think about him than even what we've seen. And he's put in a good showing. You know how hard it is to find quarterbacks. I'm a fan of, if you believe, you have to take risk. And I think it is a risk to sign him soon, but it's also a risk to not sign him and for him to ball out next year because the price goes up. So if he's shown you enough that you think he's your franchise quarterback, the sooner you sign him, the cheaper he's going to be. So I think that's probably a smart move to do.
I mean, you'd want to do like a Garoppolo-ish type contract that's right. really a 2-year deal.
Right.
Which
and you could get that now. You're not going to get that. Did. If you franchise yeah. him and he balls next year, you're not going to get that contract. You're then going to be stuck paying him or committing at least 4 to 5 years to him. And I don't think it's dumb to talk extension right now.
Finding a quarterback is hard. So is hiring in general. It's challenging, Dominique.
Oh, my God. What a segue.
But there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart, and growing businesses connect qualified candidates. Codable co-founder Gretchen Huebner experienced how challenging hiring can be after unsuccessfully searching for a new game artist to grow with her education tech company. But then she switched to ZipRecruiter and saw an immediate difference. And you can, too, by signing up for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Mina. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. And by using ZipRecruiter's screening questions to filter candidates, Gretchen found it easier to focus on the best ones than find the right one. In fact, after posting her job on ZipRecruiter, Gretchen said she was honestly surprised she found qualified applicants so quickly and hired a new game artist in less than 2 weeks. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter. Smartest way to hire. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Mina. That's ZipRecruiter.com/MINA.
Question. Question. Lenny, for your thoughts.
This is a good one for you, Dominique, because you've been watching a lot more Colts football than me.
Yep.
Friendly neighborhood Justin. Is Jacoby Brissett the long-term guy at Indy?
I think this is I think the answer is yes. But this is similar to the Tannehill situation.
Yeah.
But I think he's proven himself for a longer period of time. So again, what are you going to do? What's the alternative? He is not, top of the league type of guy, but he is above average. He's reliable. He got injured, but he plays through those things. Like, I don't know what the alternative, so I think he is a yes.
Tannehill is more athletic. Jacoby thinks he's athletic. He plays like whenever he takes off, oh, you think you got wheels. Like,
do you remember when he first got his first start for the Patriots and they had a bunch of design runs in there for him?
Yes,
and
I do.
And I was like, what?
Yes.
That's not the type of quarterback that I thought he was. Not that I watched a ton of Jacoby Brissett, but I saw him running and I was like, nah, that's not how he's going to stay in the league.
No. Thymjt, I might have spelled that wrong, wants to know what direction the Falcons should go in for their next head coach. This is presuming they're going to fire Dan Quinn. It's an interesting question.
Right. So I think a lot of people have philosophies on how to hire head coaches. Like, you need a head coach like this. But I've come to believe that you need a different type of coach for a different for different situations. And I think when you have a proven quarterback, what they have in Matt Ryan, that you don't necessarily need to go the offensive route, which I think is the in vogue move. I think you go defense, but you know me, I'm a big fan of my experience with John Harbaugh, and I think the special teams coach is always a smart way to go because the training that it requires to be a head coach, I think, is very similar to being a special teams coach, where you don't get a ton of time with anybody. You have to convince a lot of people to do things that they don't want to do, and you are not necessarily knee deep in scheme all week. It's a lot about dealing with personalities and relationships. It's a real training ground, I think, for being a head coach. But special teams coaches tend not to get the type of respect that you would want your head coach to get off the bat.
Yeah, you know, we should have this conversation at the end of the season about how all the coaching hires this year worked out, because I think it's still TBD, honestly. Like, I don't think any of them have been a slam dunk. You know, obviously, Matt LaFleur has had some success, but I don't think... Like, I wouldn't pin that much of that on him, to be honest. And, you know, I was seeing by watching this Broncos tape, if they can get Drew Locke going at the end of the year, this Broncos team might have something going for them next season, but that's a big if. And then, you know, I've talked about Kliff a lot here. I don't know. It's an interesting conversation because I just don't think there's no McVay story, right? It's all a little bit mixed. Both teams played hard. Great handle. Wants to know if Mina Kim show hats are for sale. Dominique, are they for sale?
I mean, I don't know. I can't find a place to purchase them. I have not been gifted one, no matter how many times I appear on the show, the most of all times, and no matter how great a guest I am, the best of all time. I still don't have a shirt, a hat, no Mina Kimes drawers, no socks, nothing.
There's no drawers. You can buy shirts on levitardaf.threadless.com. I think there's a free shipping deal right now, but the hats, unfortunately, are not on sale. It's limited edition.
All right, well, I'll go buy myself a shirt.
Edge Dreamer asks, which Seahawks from the 2013 team are Hall of Famers? Ooh, this is a fun one.
Yeah, okay, that's for you, obviously.
Well, I'll read some names to you. Marshawn Lynch.
Sure. I'm not that strict with Hall of Fame, honestly.
But,
Marshawn Lynch was really good for a long time, so sure, give him one.
All right, you're going to go sure.
I'll say no to somebody, okay. Russell Wilson. Hell no, he's trash. Okay,
give me a break.
No, yes. Obviously, he's probably going to be a Hall of Famer.
Doug Baldwin.
No. You agree with that, right?
Yeah, that's okay. Probably.
I mean, so hard for receivers to get in the first place.
His career probably isn't long enough. It's interesting. Okay, Cam Chancellor.
No.
Earl Thomas.
Yes.
Yes, safeties have a hard time, but yes.
Yeah, but he was the best safety in the game for at least a few year stretch there.
Oh, you know what I really want to complain about? How about that NFL 100 list and all these, like, really old dudes leaving out, like, Darrell Revis? Also, there are 12 running backs and 7 DBs. What the heck?
Yeah, it's hateful.
Richard Sherman.
Yeah, obviously.
It's not really, those would be the ones.
Yeah, I think.
You know, it's getting a little bit hairy after that.
Yeah. So, well, that's a lot of Hall of Famers, I think, for one team.
That would be a lot. I mean, yeah, Wilson, Lynch.
I suspect
Sherman,
that I'm wrong about something in there, because not all of them are going to get in. I guess, like, Wilson's definitely going to get in because quarterbacks have a bias.
Oh, Bobby Wagner.
Wagner. Ooh.
Obviously, dude.
Yeah. I mean, he's
dominated his position for like 5 years.
But now I feel like I need to take some people out, because how many teams for a dynasty get in 5 or 6 guys? Like, where are we at now?
The debatable one is actually Marshawn, because he didn't play long enough. But I think Wilson, Wagner, Sherman, and Thomas are locks, personally.
It's a lot.
It is a lot for a single team. Okay, last question. Adrian Jaragui is a Bengals fan, and he has two questions. One, he wants to know when the Body Blows voice is going to return. When we talk about Body Blows, it'll return, probably in the NFC wildcard game between the Seahawks and the Cowboys, and then I'll jump into a notion. Should you build around your young core, and he mentions AJ Green, not so young these days, Joe Mixon, Taj Boyd, Geno Atkins, or trade for draft picks next year? And I guess, ostensibly, they'd be drafting Joe Burrow.
Right. I'm not a fan of bringing a quarterback into a depleted organization. Like, I don't think that is good for anybody. Mm. So if you have,
it's a mix.
Yeah, it's not a strategy that I don't really believe in absolutes in general. But if I have to pick one, like, I'd rather bring a young quarterback into a good situation. And I mean, maybe these guys are just good players, but I feel like in the history, we've seen guys grow into being great quarterbacks when they were brought into good situations and they had to, like, game manage for a little bit. Obviously, Russell and Dak and Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, like, there's some recent names where it's like these guys came in and they were in stable organizations with good teammates and they grew pretty quickly in that situation.
We could do a whole podcast about this. And this would be fun, by the way, to look at some of the guys you mentioned and look at the successes and failures of first-year quarterbacks. But I think good situation is a debate. Like, that can mean a lot of different things, right? Like, if you're going to invest, what position matters the most? What kind of players do you want? You know, that sort of thing, I think. I was thinking about that, Dominique, while watching Kyler, who I really adore and love. Yeah. But I feel like the lack of playmakers in an offensive line has kind of worn on him as the season has gone on.
I think you're right, and I understand, but I don't even think it's that granular of, like, specific. I guess there's an ideal like, you want to have a good offensive line. You want to have a playmaker you can trust. You want to have a running game. But honestly, I just think it's like a good team. Like, when there is not as much pressure on you, like, if you have a great defense and your offense is not all great, and that's the Russell model, Russell Wilson model. Essentially, it's like their offense wasn't that good, but they had a really good defense. It just, to me, it feels like they're, when you take a young guy, you put him in a situation where he's expected to be the savior, and there's so much pressure, like, it'd be ideal to have all those things that you would want to make their job easier, but I just honestly think that when there's not, all the pressure's not on you, it gives you some time to develop.
That's kind of like what Josh Allen has right now. A very good defense, a good offensive line, and like a couple of playmakers who are suited to his abilities. All right, cool. We'll talk about that more. I think that's interesting. So the other game I really want to talk about, sort of two teams in, I'd say, you know, playoff contention. And I think they're very interesting teams who appear to be trending in different directions. The Rams and the Cowboys are playing on Sunday. So I want to start with the Rams, fresh off my Seahawks brutal defeat, which I predicted, because I find their offense fascinating.
Well, the Rams are yours also, so... Your Seahawks played your Rams.
You were there. You saw.
And your Rams won.
What happened? You saw.
No. You're a crazy Seahawks fan.
We don't need to rehash all that.
I won't tell anybody anything that happened, but don't worry. There are no split allegiances with me.
All right. We watched the last game together. We should have watched. You're good luck. I wish I'd watched this one with you. But I find some of the things happening on offense very interesting because I was irritated while watching the game, because I knew there would just be this narrative, oh, if Sean McVay had just used Todd Gurley all along, they would have been fine, which bothers me, because I don't think that's true. But I do think it's more complicated than just Jared Goff is playing better, which is statistically undeniable, and if you have eyes, you can see that. And I'm also, just by the way, really talking about, we're talking about two games, which I also think really matters. But I think that watching those two games was fascinating. I watched the Arizona game as well. I wanted to watch Kyler too, and I was sad. But it's very fascinating to me, some of the schematic changes the Rams have made on offense. A lot of people have noticed they've been using a lot more 12 personnel, using the tight ends. Tyler Higbee obviously has been a huge playmaker over the last couple of games. But they've also completely changed their run game, right? It used to be almost exclusively outside zone. Defenses developed counters to that. You saw the Seahawks doing the same thing that they did in the first game, in this game, even though defense has been doing that less. And the thing is, Dominique, it's not like over the last two games they've run incredibly well. It was just the overall run game had zero expected points added per play against Seattle.
It's better than negative.
that's the key, because it was extremely negative all season. So it's not like, oh, wow, the run game is clicking and suddenly everything. It's really just, it's not negative anymore. But they are running more. And so I guess I want to ask you, like, what you make of that and potentially, like, why we could be seeing some improvement from Jared Goff.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I watched the game and I did not see a whole bunch new and different. The 12 personnel thing was something I noticed also, which I think that creates a different dynamic. We know Sean McVay is someone who almost exclusively loves 11, but the 12 helped. But it seemed like they were doing a lot of the same things they had success with. Like Jared Goff's
passing concepts.
Yeah, Jared Goff's concepts. It was a lot of boot, get him out of the pocket, a lot of play action, and attacking the holes in the zones. It didn't seem all that unique. And even, I know they added some other running plays to their playbook, but the most effective plays, at least, and this is just from my memory, were outside zones. Like, it wasn't a ton of big, long runs, but the ones that I remember Gurley getting that touchdown on stiff arm, that was an outside zone. Mm-hmm. Gurley had another one that I think went about 12 yards on the left side, going from left to right. He ran left, and that was an outside zone. So, and I see a lot of bunch, like, tight formations and...
Which we've seen.
Yeah, like, that's what I'm saying. I see a lot of screens and jet sweeps. Like, it's... To me, it doesn't feel all that new and different. And I guess you can chalk it up to having some of the playmakers back that Jared Goff relies on, the pass catchers, that could be part of it. But honestly, I had a hard time figuring out what was different because I didn't, and
yeah.
granted, I didn't watch the All 22, but I didn't notice a ton of schematic changes.
The one thing I would also throw in there is the offensive line, which has
right.
changed in terms of personnel due to injuries, is playing better, right? Which, by the way, is something we've seen across the leagues. I was talking to Seth Walder about this in our analytics group, and you know they track pass rush or pass block win rate and pass mm-hmm. rush win rate, and the numbers are trending upwards, which makes sense. That I think coheres with what we hear about like offensive lines coming into the NFL not knowing how to play together because of the practice rules and all that. But in any case, Jared Goff, so far this season, still using a ton of play action, 25th. Over the last 2 weeks in passer rating off of play action, which last year he was, you know, incredible. Over the last 2 weeks, it's gone up to 8th. He's having a lot more success out of their staple concepts. Now, I don't think that means, so you could look at that and you could say, okay, Jared Goff is more successful out of play action and they're running the football more. But I don't think it means that you have to run it X times for play action to work. In fact, he had more success in the first half passing. So it wasn't like they had quote unquote established the run, right? And I don't think you have to, you know, pass more out of 12. I just think it has to be believable. Right. And well executed. I think that they've landed on run concepts that they're confident in. The offensive line is selling them better, and Jared Goff is just making the throws. I don't know. I think yeah. we overcomplicate these things, and we think, oh, okay, you know, they ran Gurley X times to the play action work, and that's why. And I really don't think that's it. Like, those throws were there earlier in the season, to be honest. Like, Jared Goff's expected completion percentage, right, Next Gen Stats tracks, like, what quarterbacks should be completing, has been high all year. Mm-hmm. It's not like guys weren't open. I think over the last 2 weeks, they happen to play a pair of defenses that are very vulnerable to these tactics, two defenses that are very bad against tight ends. And then in Seattle, Dominique, I'm sure you noticed, a defense that relies heavily on base, which means they're extremely vulnerable to passing out of heavy sets, like 12. I do wonder if this is like yeah. as much about opponent as anything.
Yeah, this could be an aberration, but they're lucky they're going to play the Cowboys, who have a really bad defense. So, like, I whether it's an aberration or not, I don't expect it to change this week. The following week, they have the 49ers, then we'll really see what's up. But I do think the idea that you have to I don't think running the ball a certain amount of times, I think you hit the nail on the head where it has to be believable, because
yeah.
what play action is really effective if you suck guys up and you trick them because they believe the play action. But it's also effective if if the defensive coordinator is about to call a play and in his mind he's like, oh, they're going to run right now, because then he calls something that he believes will stop the run, which puts them in a compromised situation against pass plays. So I think even if you have success or you don't have success with the running game, it may not be relevant necessarily, but if they're going to run cover one, or they're going to run cover three, or they're going to do some sort of inside stunt because they anticipate that you're going to run, then that makes it easier to protect, and it makes it easier for your receivers to get open. So if you run it a certain amount of times, there is no number, but that depends on the psychology of the defensive coordinator and how much you're running the ball in his own general kind of disposition. If you're like an old school guy where it's like, we got to stop the run, and
yeah.
they're likely to have success against a team like that.
Which is Seattle to some degree. And yeah. By the way, if you thought Seattle bit on play fakes, hello Cowboys defense. what was going through your mind watching Mitch Trubisky morph into Lamar Jackson against this unit? Good Lord.
You can't be surprised. Their defense has been bad all year. But you had to think that Mitch Trubisky's badness, even though he's been good in recent weeks, would not manifest itself in a way that it was actually greatness and not badness against this team. The Cowboys are, I want to say that they're an enigma, but no, they've been bad all year. They just have a lot of really good players that don't play well together on defense. And their defense has been holding them back this entire season, just terrible field position setting up the offense and giving up points. They've been bad, and they will continue to be bad. I was high on them before the season started, like many people, but clearly.
Why are they so wrong? I mean, you're right. Like, they have talented players at every level. I mean, Leighton Vander Esch has been out, but he was not playing at a his, nope. you know, comparable to his first year before he went out. Jalen Smith cannot cover.
Right.
Okay. I'm sorry. Sean Lee occasionally just flashes, but for the most part, he looks his age. I'd say the D-lines, like, they'll still get pressure, but they make dumb mistakes constantly. Right. Byron Jones, their best corner, they can't pay him now. Yeah. Gotta give that money a running back. yeah, I don't know. They're just bad. And by the way, that's when we talk about Jason Garrett and everyone's like, oh, fire him now. You're going to hand this over to Rod Marinelli and Chris Rashard? Are you guys watching this defense? Right? Because at some point, this has to fall on them. I mean, they run a pretty simplistic scheme. It's not too different from the Seattle cover three, cover one model. And it just feels like the talent can't execute it.
Yeah, doesn't make sense. Like, if you run schemes like that because they're simple and you're like, we got better players than you. So we're not going to complicate it. We don't have to do anything tricky. We're going to just run something simple and let our athletes be better than your athletes.
Yeah.
And it worked for much of last year, especially towards the end of last season. But it isn't working this season. And I think you have to obviously put a few wrinkles in here or there, but that wouldn't be the solution. They aren't a few wrinkles away from being good. They're no. bad all the time. So I don't know. It's hard for me to put it on the coaches necessarily because it's the same defense that they ran last year and they're so bad. Mm-hmm. And it's not even, and it's also difficult to single out one particular player or one particular unit because they all fail at different points and different times throughout the season. So they're another team that falls into that Texans category where it's like they could mess around and pop up one week and just happen to be in the playoffs and just put it all together because the talent is still there and surprise some people and get a win. But they're not a team that I would be betting on.
So I mentioned earlier that I adore Deshaun Watson, but he is not, you know, in this last game, he didn't play well. Dak Prescott hasn't been playing well the last couple of weeks. I mean, there's been flashes. I'm a Dak supporter like
right,
you.
I know.
He's not been playing well, though. I mean, they'll have, like, this great first drive, and then at the end of the last game, you know, he kind of went into beast mode. But by and large, something's been going on the last couple of games with him.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to argue with that. And he had a quote before this game about there not being any excuses, and he needs to play better. And it's like anecdotal, but like it sounds like somebody who's pressing at this point. And like he was playing really good earlier in the season and they were getting let down. They were still losing in part because mostly because the defense and special teams were not very good. And I think he feels like, well, I need to do more. And again, it's anecdotal, but you could understand how the pressing could lead to mistakes, but there's a lot of drops
and
a lot of tip balls into the air. And that's like, I am biased in favor of Dak because I got on that train before other people realized how good he was. So maybe I can't be fair and analyzing him, but I always look at other people and blame them first.
I mean, it's certainly not just Dak, you know, I mean, yeah, this is, you could, I mean, after Amari, it's like, I mean, not Amari too.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not
he
even.
He disappears on the road as well.
It's,
yeah.
Amari stresses me out because.
What's up with Kellen Moore, by the way? Yeah. I think he was supposed to, let's blame Kellen Moore. That's
okay,
more fun.
I'm down. Let's do that.
I thought he was supposed to be like the great young savior. I watched him call three straight runs at the goal line, Dominique. What's going on? And I know all the Kevin McCullough Moore defenders are like, well, that's just Jason Garrett. Well, is it though? I mean, I don't know. I guess we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
It's dispiriting.
It is dispiriting, but, and it's hard to the one constant that's been there through all this underachieving has been, Jason Garrett. So he is probably going to be where the buck stops eventually. I don't think they're going to let Kellen Moore leave. My guess is whoever they bring in. Unless it's Lincoln Riley, which I think is probably unlikely, that whoever they bring in is going to get stuck with Kellen Moore as the offensive coordinator because the offense has been, or at least Dak, the most important asset you have, has gotten better under Kellen Moore.
Well, to wrap it up, I weirdly think even though we were just crapping all over the Cowboys for the last 10 minutes, this isn't a terrible matchup for them.
Right.
I think, you know how we were talking about the Rams offense and sort of how I think they've benefited in some ways from the two particular defenses they just faced. I don't think the Cowboys defense is good, but I do think they can get pressure.
Right.
And I think that's, you know, obviously that's Goff's big issue. So I wouldn't be surprised if this is pretty close.
In Dallas, so that's who you're picking? You're picking Cowboys get the win? I wouldn't be surprised if it's really, if it's pretty close. I like that. That's a good prediction right there. I wouldn't be surprised if it's really close.
All right, who are you picking?
I'm waiting for you. It's your show. Lead the way.
I don't know. I haven't decided yet.
Yeah, I don't know.
My picks go on the record.
Oh, that's true. You gotta submit them. I mean, I don't know. It's a coin toss. It's two bad teams.
A few more questions. Let's hear them.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
Question one. Who is going to win, the Rams or the Cowboys?
I'm going to go with the Cowboys, I guess.
I kind of think so, too. It just feels, yeah.
Yeah, it's not based on any analysis because I think they're probably pretty close
teams. I think they'll get pressure.
Like they're home, yeah. I guess. Well, you're basing it on some analysis. I'm not basing on any analysis. It's two teams that are pretty evenly matched, and the Cowboys are due in their home. They're
good.
Due.
That's good. That's what we want. They're due. Question two. Last week I asked Charles McDonald, what would be like the worst, most undesirable Super Bowl matchup, right? Mm. What would be the most desirable, funnest one?
I think it's definitely Lamar Jackson and the AFC and the Ravens. Let me scan the NFC really quickly.
Think, Niners.
Think.
That was a fun game.
Yeah, the Niners was pretty fun.
I mean, the Niners-Saints game was incredible.
Yeah, that was incredible. Well. I think it would be nice to see the Niners again because they were on the road. They barely lost in a rainy game. I think that'd be an interesting matchup there to have that repeat. What do you think?
I think that would be Niners-Ravens. It's funny because
the rematch of the last Super Bowl.
Niners-Saints was the most fun game of the year, but Niners-Ravens felt like the best. Game, right. Like the best teams to me in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Oh, but I mean, we're completely bypassing Patrick Mahomes in the AFC. Like, that's still fun.
Yeah. I don't know. I will say that pass defense has looked a lot better.
Yeah.
I love Patrick Mahomes. You know, the Niners defense has quietly given up a lot of points lately. Something to keep an eye on.
Heavy.
And now, they lost, Sherman for a bit, and then, they lost their center. That, I think, is a sneaky, sneaky impactful injury on that run game.
Didn't the Ravens lose their center a few weeks
Matt
ago?
Matt Skura, yeah.
They're still
centers
running.
Dropping like flies. All right, we're on question three. What is something you'd like to wear on TV, but you haven't yet worked up the courage to? Just like a fit you're fancying.
I'm going to go.
Never sounds right coming out of my mouth. Fire on TV today, and it did not go well.
I
was like,
it.
That was fire, and everyone just sighed. Yeah.
Don't second guess yourself. You just
I know.
Because the fit, I didn't grab my attention. It felt natural.
Fit.
So I'm going to go with the Tupac leather vest with no shirt and gold chain.
Stop.
That's the move. I've been hoping. I still got a couple of abs left, and I want to show them off before they leave because they're gonna leave soon.
Like Tupac, you got Tupac.
Yeah, it's almost there. I got about four and a half right now.
Four and a half. Second half look like. All right. Fourth question. Who? I didn't write these beforehand.
You are stretched too thin, my friend.
It's been a rough one. Dude.
I know your
it's
energy,
been a,
this whole radio show. I've been trying to
really,
lift it, but it's.
I've really enjoyed these games. I'm like excited for both of them. I don't actually didn't look up what time they're on.
You're exhausted though. I could hear it in your voice.
Thank you. You know me. I mean, you didn't need to tell everyone. It's fine. All right. Question four. You know, like the Do Your Job series. Who is a job you'd actually like to see featured in football?
I don't know. Let me see. All right. So we got the training staff. We got equipment crew, coaches.
Did you see how the Rams cheerleaders were still on the field during?
Oh, were they?
I enjoyed that a lot. Yeah. Mascot's a pretty good one, I feel like.
Yeah.
But not like a fun, goofy. Like, I want to know, like, the real, like, the dark stuff.
Yeah, how they don't get paid very well and it's sweaty. And are there, like, I'm trying to think. Oh, the. the Broncos horse.
Oh, God.
I'm going to follow that guy around, or girl.
Lenny has a question for you. It's the last one.
All right.
So he's been listening every day to ESPN Daily, my other podcast. Oh, by the way, don't forget to check out ESPN Daily if you're listening. It's 20 minutes every day, different sports story. And while you're at it, don't forget to check out The Right Time with Bomani Jones. This week, Bomani weighs in on another accusation of spying by the Patriots and discusses how robocalls are killing the art of conversation. Download and subscribe to The Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. Get back to Letty. He's been listening to ESPN Daily every day. And he wants to know why you came on once, but you haven't been invited back.
I mean, is that a question for me or is that a question for Mina? I don't know. I'm always waiting. I guess I haven't pitched anything. The other time.
Pitch us now.
Yeah. The Lamar Jackson thing fell into my lap because Mina and I wrote a piece and he's been playing awesome, but I gotta work on something and pitch it because, I mean, I'm the best guest ever in the history of guesting on anything that requires a guest.